Good morning.
Good morning.
I have to say, first off, thank you for having me and welcoming me back. Can't say enough how grateful we are to be able to stay here and to see all of you again. It's almost too much to take in. But for those of you who don't know me, my name's Jeremy, and for a little while, this was my family. So, and it still is. And so you'll have to excuse me as it's kind of an emotional moment for me. But we have been in South Korea teaching English for 2 years. And 2 years ago, when we left here, it was a tremendous experience to leave everything we knew. And I don't know, I'm not sure how many of you have experienced that, but leaving home, leaving everything you know, packing up your things in boxes and putting them somewhere that you won't touch them for 2 years, it's a tremendous impact. It makes a tremendous impact on you. And you know, I've been racking my brain trying to think how in the world I can sum this up. I only have one verse, and it's one that's been on my brain for 2 years at least. It's actually in 2 Corinthians chapter 12. I gotta double check my notes here. It's in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 7 through 10. But first off, you know, to understand the context, you know, Paul is probably, he's on the road and he's writing to his church, in Corinth. This is his second letter to them because he's received feedback that, you know, things are going well and things are not going well. And he's had to address this issue. And his whole message here, there's one part of it that I always skipped over. I was always paying attention to everything else. So I'll go ahead and read this to get you into the mindset. Right now he's trying not to boast, but he is boasting in a way. He's boasting in the Lord, so I'm going to share. It's verse 7. And to keep me from being puffed up and too much elated from exceeding, ooh, greatness, that's a little different version of these revelations, there was given me a thorn in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to rack, buffet, and harass me, to keep me from being exalted, to keep me from being puffed up. Three times I called upon the Lord, three times. He was desperately wanting to get rid of this, and sought him about this and begged him that it might depart, that it might leave me. But he said to me, my grace, favor, loving kindness, and mercy, my grace is enough for you. For my strength and power are made perfect in weakness. And then he said, therefore, I will all the more gladly glory in my weakness and infirmities, and the strength and the power of Christ may rest. And in another version, he said, I'm content. What does that word mean? Content. We say content. Oh, I'm content for the meantime. I can be content for now. There's these different phrases and these different things. And it's a nice buzzword. It's a wonderful word. And I used it a few times, but deep down, I really didn't feel content. I was always unrestful. I was always nervous. You mentioned fear. How terrifying is it to leave your home country to a place you've never been? I mean, I can't even explain to you what contentment meant to me in that context. So I'll share a little more of the story now. But I wanted to get that as a foundation. I want you to think about contentment in the back of your brain. So we had the battle with this lesson of contentment. We had the battle with this because where we were going, 50, 60 years ago, there was a war. And up till more recently when they had the Olympics in 88 was one of the first significant times that they had opened up their doors to people from foreign nations at all. So understanding your role in this, knowing that America, of course, had a significant presence in the Korean War, but also knowing that you're probably the first foreign face many people will see, is something that you're not even thinking of in the faintest idea in your brain. When you're getting on a plane, the only thing you're thinking of is, what will the apartment be like? What will the kids be like? What will they expect of me? You're not even thinking about that. So when we were looking for jobs, we were talking with agencies and everything else. I remember all of a sudden our agent got back to us, and she was anxiously seeking. And to understand, in Korea, they have two different ways you can go. You can either teach English in a private school, and there's a big booming business in private school teaching for English, music, Chinese, many things. It's an industry. So there's private school, and then there is public school. And we were looking for private school. We were looking for anything. At this point, some of the jobs I held before we left, at one point I was sorting hangers out of a box for Nordstrom. I was playing my horn at a Salvation Army collection site. I was trying to hold on to any job. In fact, I worked with one of the fine people of this church at FedEx for a while. I was scrounging for work, trying to find anything I could, and I was not content. I was not content at all. The only contentment I found was this family here. This was home, and it still is. At this point, we had moved from Portland, and we're in my mother-in-law's house. All of our stuff is loaded away in this closet, and we are just on edge. We had applied for unemployment. We had no idea how long we were going to be on it. We had no idea, you know, if anything was going to come of this adventure in Korea. And at this point, we had worked very hard to get, you can't imagine the paperwork. You can't imagine it. Well, all of a sudden we got on the Skype chat with our agent, and she said, "I have two schools for you." And I thought, "Great. So we have choices. This is good." And she said, "No, there's two schools that want to hire you." Excuse me? One school wants to hire Jessica, and one school wants to hire Jeremy. And I was like, I don't know about this. But then they said, "Well, the schools want to interview you." I thought, okay, good. We got a few weeks. We can interview. We can go. They called and they said, "How fast can you get here?" That was my call. That was my interview. How fast can you get here? And thus starts the adventure of Korea. So our first time, we'll fast forward a few days, because within the week that they called us, by the end of that week, we were on the plane. It was that drastic. And I didn't know this at the time, but many things in Korea are kind of done in the last minute. And usually there's somebody at the lower end of the totem pole that is totally stressed and calling you to get you over there. So we were there within a week. We flew, and it was an 11-hour flight. Welcome to Seoul. We grabbed all of our bags. We had two full carts full of luggage. we're ready for anything. Maybe. She's shaking her head. And then we got in the van and we drove for another hour and a half. And it was nighttime, so I couldn't see anything. So I didn't know where we were. I didn't know where we were going. I wasn't even sure. The only thing I knew was we met with our agent, and the agent was the one that set up the van ride. So here we go. In the van drive, we came acquainted with someone who did not speak our language at all. And he's driving around, and we're in the back seat, you know, in and out of consciousness. And we get into town, and then he starts looking lost. I've never been so concerned about a lost driver in all my life. I could not help him. I did not know where we were going. And then I heard him getting on the phone and getting frustrated. I could hear he was frustrated. He didn't know. He was confused. Didn't know. And then we parked out front of this, you know, 9-story building, you know, this big, I don't know if I can even describe it to you. Most of the buildings are built up. So across the street, there is a huge, one-stop shop called E-Mart. And the parking garage made it loom over the street. And then on my right, there is another tall building. And I didn't know why we were there, because it didn't look like there was any residential area to be found. And then all of a sudden, oh, there's, you know, a few Korean faces getting in the van. They're smiling. That's good. But is he going to drop us off? Like, I didn't know. They did speak English. That was a plus. Eventually, we found out that this was the director's wife and that she was there to help us. And we got to our apartment, and I think our apartment conveniently fit maybe from this wall to maybe there. Square. We showed up. And we were thinking in an American mindset. Okay, sure, there will be a bedroom, there will be a living room, there will be a kitchen. No. This was what we would call a studio apartment. So we get into this tiny, tiny place. We're exhausted. And then we discover there's no pots and pans. There's no dryer. There's no drying rack. The only thing we have is some bedding. A bed and some furniture. Welcome to Korea. And then they said, do you like the apartment? And I just thought, sure, yeah, it's great. And then they said, are you hungry? And we said, yes, we're hungry. You know, where can we? Well, there's restaurants around. I was like, what? That was not what I expected at all. So we get into this apartment, we have no way to contact, and then we had a holiday just after that day. So that was our day to first try and find internet so we could find out. They didn't even tell us what city we were in. We didn't even know what city we were in. That would have been helpful to know. Yeah. No. They said, be outside your apartment at this time in 2 days. And we said, okay. So we, you know, the first day in Korea, I think we headed over to that big shopping place that we saw. And that was all we really knew at the time. We knew vaguely that you could find maybe a PC, a place, they call it a PC bong, which is room. And we knew that we could probably find internet there. So, I mean, that was really the start of it. Everything had to be rediscovered. Everything. There was no hit the ground running. We had to rediscover banking. We had to rediscover transportation. We had to rediscover everything basic, even down to getting a haircut. Where do we go to get a haircut? I don't know. And we didn't have a lot of funds, and yeah, contentment. I was not content. Oh, I tell you, and that's really, I mean, I'm not going to go too deep into the Bible today because I don't really need to. The message is pretty apparent as soon as you get there. God is with you everywhere you go. But the rubber really hits the road when you are in a place so completely foreign and upside down that you don't know if you're making it back home, let alone, you know, if you're going to be earning pay or being able to cover the bills. That's not even the faintest idea on your brain. The main thing is every day is an adventure. And that was really the start of it. So, now I can try and sum up all, you know, both years, and I can talk on, but I think stories are probably the best to share. So our first day, teaching. So here we go. We walked out the front door, and then we waited, and we waited, and we waited, what? An hour. Then they came, but then they were in a hurry. So start trekking after these Koreans that are way fitter than I ever could be. Following them, and then they take us through a building, because most of the streets are, there's not a lot of rhyme and reason to the streets. They're wound up, and there's no stop signs in this town. Didn't really know, but we had an idea that the school was somewhere in this town. So then they brought us over to Jessica's school. And Jessica's school is on the sixth floor of a 9-story building that includes a cinema, I want to say 3 or 4 different clinics, pharmacy, Dunkin' Donuts, yes, 2 or 3 different coffee places.
Don't forget the Baskin Robbins.
The Baskin Robbins. But it was not the sort of place I would have ever expected to see a school. I thought about a freestanding school. No, this was in an office, you know, suite. So then we get up and we meet the director, and I'm thinking, okay, be on your best behavior. Thank you for bringing us here. You have a beautiful place. So I'm pulling out all my charm, trying to, you know, be as polite as I can. And then they say, well, this is Jessica's school. Someone will be here shortly to take you to your school. And I thought, here we go. So eventually somebody did come and pick us up, and it was on the street, and he picked us up right by a bus stop that was buzzing with people, and I've never seen a car come and park next to a bus stop and, come on, get in. And so we get in this vehicle, and we're riding at least 45 minutes to get to my school, and I'm thinking, I don't even know the street name. I don't know where I'm going. And we get to this school, and this school is it's a freestanding building, and it's, I want to say it's 10 stories tall. And my school, on the way there anyway, the director, at least I think he was a director, I don't know. He asked, so are you ready to lecture today? I said, excuse me? And he was very serious. We got there. Here's your stack of books. Here's your schedule. Here's 15 minutes. Get ready to teach. And I don't know if you knew me before this, but I really, you know, I wasn't great around children. I didn't know what to do with children. They terrified me. Jess can attest to this. And so, yeah, Jess helped co-teach the first few classes while she was there. Then they gave her a ride back to her school, and I said, so am I getting a ride? And they said, we'll get back to you on that. I said, this just keeps getting better and better. So thankfully I had a few bucks tucked away in my pocket, and they said, well, we can help you print a bus schedule. And I was like, thank you. Can you help me to the bus stop? Where is the bus stop? I don't even know where the bus stop is. And I didn't know who spoke English. I didn't know how I was getting back. Like, I was a mess. And thankfully, though, the one thing that I discovered very quickly in Korea was your resources are right in front of you. But you have to ask. You have to step up. You have to, you can't just expect things to happen that way. You have to take an active part and say, where is this? Because if you don't speak up, you're not going to get home. I looked at Jesse. I said, well, I hope I see you tonight. You know, I don't know. And then I got on the, I remember getting on the bus and it was dark. You know, I mean, my schedule, it was quite nice for someone who's associated getting up in the morning and or working at night. My schedule was usually about 2 PM till about 9:30 in the evening. And so that was my schedule. So that gave me some time to get there. But when I was leaving, it was late at night and I didn't know what this looked like during daylight really. And I didn't know what it looked like during the nighttime. All I knew was this big yellow E-Mart sign. And I knew, you know, that I had about 45 minutes. So I don't know, but by the grace of God, I made it home. I managed to make it home. I printed a map. Yeah, that's right. I had a map in my pocket. And I walked into the house and I had never been so grateful to just see a familiar face. To just be able to lay down and just breathe for a little bit. But then the next day, I knew I had to do that all over again. And I think obviously over time you learn how to find things. We had one of the tremendous things in Korea that I discovered was how tremendously helpful the other expats or community of people that were not from Korea, the foreigner community, would be to help you find things, to help you find resources. And thankfully, we had this wonderful tool called Facebook and Internet. But we still had to find the PC bongs to use the Internet for a while before we were able to get Internet or even a phone. The other fun thing, I didn't have a phone. I couldn't call anybody. I couldn't let anybody know what was going on. I remember making the Facebook post, and that was after, on a Windows XP with Hangul, I had to, Hangul is Korean, I had to sneakingly put, you know, Google Chrome onto the computer just so I could message people because it wasn't updated and make my quick post. And I was so grateful to just make a post saying, we have landed.
Tell our parents we're here safe.
That was one of the first things. But the bill collectors did manage to call me at 2 AM. That was fun. They could make a call from the States to me, but I couldn't call out because my phone, I don't know how it still had battery, but it did. And so I said, I'm in South Korea. I really don't know how to help you. I don't know my address. I don't know my phone number. Oh, really? What time is it there? It's 2 AM. Oh gosh, that's not good. And I was like, yeah, I know. So, I'll be getting back to you. Okay. Bye. Click. But on a more serious note, if this couldn't be any less serious, probably there were several tremendous things that happened in Korea. First off, transportation is a mess. I mean, they have public transportation and it is, I mean, to the eye from somebody from Portland, I mean, the bus doesn't even begin to compare with the subway, the train network, the buses, even how many cabs there are everywhere. You can just flag down a cab almost anywhere you are. Now, if you can explain to them where you want to go, that's the next trick, but, I remember, I'll share this one moment. with you. We were on the train, and because we don't speak the language, if they make an announcement on the train, we we don't know if it's going to stop or if it's, you know, going to continue on to its destination. At this point, we're at a major hub, and we saw an empty train, and we think, yes, we're the first ones. We can get in. We can sit down. We can get where we need to go. So we got on the train. And there were two other, you know, older Korean men on the train. So we thought, okay, we're not the only ones. More people will filter on. It'll be okay. Well, pretty soon we discovered things were not okay. Because then I believe the doors, did the doors close before? How did that work?
I remember it a little differently, so.
Anyway, the doors closed, and then they opened again, and we were like, oh, I guess we need to get off. It was nighttime, so they were probably, you know, stopping with that train or needed to turn it around or something like that. Well, then we noticed that the two Korean men were not really noticing. They were having this conversation. They weren't really noticing. So we got up, and we started leaving the train, and they were coming behind us slowly. And then all of a sudden the doors closed and this man instinctively stuck his arm out to try and catch the door. But then his arm got stuck in the door. And Jessica and I were like, immediately we reached for the door and muscled this door open to try and help him. And I just remember they got out, and if you know anything about Korean society, the older men, they're just on the top. Like, they can do anything they want. They don't usually give you much notice, usually. They walk around very regal, kind of like this. And these men bowed completely to their ankles. They were so tremendously grateful to us for opening this door. And, I mean, it's literally like that. It's an adventure every day. Do you have any, like, ideas of stories that you'd like to tell? No? She's looking at me like, why are you putting me on the spot? Teaching. Never in my life have I ever been on display as much as being a foreign English teacher in a school. You know, my personality would love to just blend into the background. Even public speaking was a terrifying thing for me. Still is. You're always nervous. And all of a sudden, now I'm teaching classes. And I think probably the best illustration of what it was like is taking you through like a day in my life at a public school. So I remember, I mean, again, every day is an adventure. And at this point, I had spent a year traveling 45 minutes on the bus back and forth, in every mixture of situation and the snow and the rain, waiting at a bus stop, being crammed up against the wall like this. Yeah, that was me, holding onto rails for dear life. All the buses had standard transmissions, so the buses were really jerky and, you know, hitting bumps. I mean, it wasn't a pleasant experience. So when I was going to public school, usually I was flagging down a cab because it was short and they could be more direct and I could get there. And so I would get out of the cab, and that was an adventure in and of itself, trying to get him there because it was a complicated school to get to. But I remember getting off the cab and seeing the students walking to school. And it was almost rock star status. It really was. When you walk, Jeremy, teacher! And you hear it everywhere. Like, I can hear it, you know, over here in the top of an apartment complex, to clear out on the playground, to, you know. And they would run up to me, and they would walk with me in. And they would ask me, they would try and talk to me in Korean, and it didn't go anywhere. Smile and nod. Oh, that's nice. Oh, that's nice. You know, are you having fun? You know, simple things like that. And thumbs up was kind of my universal. Are you having fun? And they would be like, huh? And I was like, bye bye. okay, and they'd run away. And then I'd show up for school. And now class sizes at the school were probably about 30 students, and I had, I want to say, maybe about 4 or 5 classes each day on a heavy day. And I mean, it was just floor after floor of, after floor of, I mean, the school itself was 4 stories tall. And I had my own classroom, the English classroom. And I just remember, I mean, these students are under tremendous pressure. And I'll explain that in a second. But most of the day I was teaching with a Korean co-teacher. And that was probably one of the deepest cultural immersions that you could ever face. That's possible. Because every word that you're saying, she is selecting which one to translate. And so you have to really work as a team with somebody of a completely different mindset. And the students were such a joy. I mean, yeah. I was teaching, that's a good question, for those listening in. She asked, what age bracket? I was teaching between 3rd and 6th grade. But of course, in Korean age, that's actually 1 year younger than we're 1 year older.
Older.
Or sorry, 1 year older.
They're older. When they're born, they consider gestation 1 year, so they're born at 1 year old. So they're
but
older.
In truth, they're younger. They look younger. They all look younger. But they're so sweet. I mean, the kids, I would have little kids running up to me. And one international thing, if you're ever in Korea and you want something to break the ice, play rock, paper, scissors with them. Rock, scissor, paper is gold. I got away with so many things with rock, scissor, or they say rock, scissor, paper. We say rock, paper, scissors. But, I mean, I just remember the students would run up to me and I would have nothing to do, nothing to say to them. And they would all just be just staring at me, chasing after me. And, you know, I was usually trying to run to the elevator because I didn't want to climb up all those stairs all day. And they would chase after me. And to true fashion, I would push the door for, you know, push the button for the doors to close, and they'd push the door to open the doors. And I would be going back and forth with this. And I would be like thinking in my brain, I really have to go. But they had such smiles on their face, and I can't even begin to describe how innocent and sweet these kids really were. Most of them, aside from regular school, they at least had one other private school, if not maybe 2 or 3 schools that they went to after their normal school. So they were learning Chinese, they were learning English, they were going to a math school, or they were going to a music school. So these students were under tremendous pressure. So as you can imagine, there were balls of energy in the hallways and everywhere you went. Seriously, sitting at my desk, it was like this. 1 minute, you'd see a student kind of dancing or jumping or doing the Gangnam style thing up and down the hall. And then you'd blink, and then you would see one student being dragged by another student going the other way, screaming, help me, help me, help me. To another minute, you would see, you know, students clustering around each other and punching and hitting each other. I mean, it was just one of those things where I've never seen so much energy in all my life. But and most of the time, most every day, I came back and I had this sense of, that was an adventure. It's seriously, even just walking out the door is an adventure. Our apartment literally sat on top of a dog soup restaurant. And there were 3 floors. Yes, dog soup, I did say that. It's interesting. Val's smiling.
We never ate it, but it stunk really bad.
When I walked around the corner, there was a market, and there were people, you know, cutting up fish right on the corner. And then the traffic was one big game of chicken. I've never seen traffic like Korea. Be very grateful to be in the States. Next time someone cuts you off, thank them. It's really not a big deal. I promise you it's not. Riding on the buses was terrifying because I would be riding in the, I don't know how these guys stay alive behind the driver's seat with the stress, because people literally, the bus will be going and they'll just walk and they'll just look and they'll just walk in front of the bus. And that's just something that I'd never experienced before. Somebody who is just like, okay, I'm walking now. So you figure out your own deal. I'm going to walk. cars. We had one intersection where the road kind of turned off this way and then it had a T intersection. And that was one of the worst intersections I've ever seen in Korea, because if there was somebody coming this way and turning, and then there was somebody coming this way and turning, if there was a person going straight, you had three people that were all fighting for who's going to go first. And there was no right of way. Like, I don't know where right of way plays into Korea, but maybe it's in their books. I don't know. But walking around in an environment like that every day, I mean, when you walk out the door, you literally have to say, okay, I'm here. I'm going to do this. I'm going to get where I need to go. Because if you don't, you're not going to get there. You're going to hide, and that's not a good thing. So, you know, there's plenty of other stories, I'm sure. Yeah. Don't know about chickens or livestock. Most of the cities were really pretty dense. I was in, I mean, even my town, what I would consider a town, it seems small because it was kind of clustered together, but then if you understand their living, it's very stacked up. So it was kind of hard for me to gauge, you know, what was country and what was not, but most of the time, Koreans don't like living out in the country. They like to live in high-rise apartments with lots of others. That's what's comfortable for them. If you try and recommend that they go out to the countryside for a retreat, don't bother, because that will just make them really nervous. They don't feel comfortable. Well, certain places, the demilitarized zone does have a big network of mines, but I don't know, didn't hear very much about landmines when I was there. Actually, and that's probably a good thing to say, most of Korea, you know, I went over there and I didn't know what to expect. You know, I had pictures of MASH in my head. I didn't know what to expect. And yes, that was a tip to the hat to Pastor John. But it really isn't MASH. They're all driving their vehicles. They're paying horrendous prices for gas that would make you cry. But they still drive. The roadways are built up. They have, expressways. They have, they have all the same services that we do. So it wasn't quite in the countryside, but you asked about a weird experience. Maybe it wasn't so much livestock, but it was the things that they would carry on the bus, because most of them didn't have a car. If you had a car, that was a serious sign of wealth, because you can't imagine the cost of being able to drive a vehicle over there. They drove them, but I don't know how they afforded them. But I mean, they would carry anything. Probably more than likely, they would come to our town for E-Mart, because that was the big shopping center. That was where they could get everything. And probably the funniest, most Korean thing I've seen is they always had an area with boxes, kind of a Costco experience, if you know what I'm talking about. And they would box everything up, and then they would tape big handles on them, or they'd have a bag. And they're very communal. Like, one person would carry one side, and the other person would carry the other side. And they would get on the train like that. They would get on the bus like that. So, I mean, they would be carrying groceries. I don't even know. like how many people they were trying to feed. But they would carry these huge things onto the bus, and there was no space on the bus. But they would manage to somehow get it on the bus and off the bus. I'm trying to think of...
Maybe dog lockers.
Dog lockers. Maybe I should mention that. I know that sounds so off the wall. Dog lockers? Another thing, they're usually carrying... Koreans are still trying to get used to having a lot of pets. They're not used to having animals living in their place. That's still kind of a foreign concept. They're picking up on it. They have plenty of places where you can get a cute little puppy that probably shouldn't be weaned yet. And they usually like to color their hair and accessorize them. I mean, it's incredible what they do with these dogs. But they would get on the bus and they would have these little tiny dogs and they would be carrying them. Or if they had a baby carrier, I've literally seen them carrying their dog in a baby carrier. Well, I wouldn't know. At this point, I wasn't even thinking about it. But
when you walk into a grocery store, they don't let you take in your backpacks or anything like that. And if you have to walk to the grocery store, you tend to have backpacks and things that you need to carry stuff home. And so they give you a locker. It costs 10 cents to rent a locker for the time you're in the store. You get your backpack when you're done. You pack it up. But they have lockers for the pets because they don't want the pets in the store. So they're actually like outside where they keep the carts. They're between the store and the outside, and like -2 degrees, they have dogs just locked up waiting for their owners, freezing to death, looking
at you. That's -2 Celsius, by the way.
No, it was -2 Fahrenheit.
Oh, okay.
That day.
All right. It's very cold in Korea. The temperature extremes are pretty intense. You have, during the summer, you have monsoon season. So you have heavy pouring torrential, an umbrella is almost pointless because the wind just ruins umbrellas. You can't even carry an umbrella. The water, we literally had friends that were in flood water going to work, and they still go to work in that. They don't stop. And then it turns into a sweltering, humid place for a great number of weeks. And then you have a little hint of good weather. It's very brief. It's right. I mean, if you blink, it goes away. And that's when it's actually cool enough to walk out and to not be sweating buckets. So I don't mean to exaggerate, but that's probably the way that goes. And then you have winter where everything dries up. And for Pastor John, it's actually very similar to Idaho. It dries up and it's really cold, really cold. and that's pretty much summer and winter. I mean, you have fall, and all the trees, most of the trees are leaf-bearing, so the fall is beautiful. But anyway, 2 years don't get wrapped up very well, but I guess the points that really came across from my experience is this. Every day is an adventure. Many things are going to happen that are completely out of your control. And that's something that translates no matter where you are. If you're here, you're there. And if you don't, if you're not mindful of that when you leave the house, you're in for a pretty rude awakening because it's going to happen anyway. And I'll come back to contentment. And I'll be around if you want to talk. I've got plenty more stories. I wish I had, you know, more here, more time. But when I left, the one thing that I was really missing was having some financial stability. I didn't have any financial stability. Couldn't find a job. It was so difficult for me. But then when I got there, when I had a financial stable job, there was one thing else that was missing. And that was family. That was friends. That was the wealth of people that you have around you. I can't even begin to describe what that's like. When Pastor Frank was up here, he was mentioning a passage out of Isaiah. And part of their experience was their people were scattered. They were sent to lands that were not their own. And you can't imagine what that would have felt like. But I have a little better idea of what it means to be a foreigner now. And let me tell you, you long for things as simple as driving down the road and seeing the mountains. Having the freedom to pull off to the side of the road anywhere. Being able to walk on a sidewalk and not be run over by a car trying to park. Even hearing people in the distance speaking English is a comfort to you because it's familiar, something that you know. And even being able to have people look at you from an eye level, not look down on you, but to look at you eye level. I mean, those things are tremendous, tremendous wealth. And I guess leaving this context and going over there, the one thing that I'm most grateful for is the things I left. and you develop a community anywhere you go, obviously. And we have some tremendous friends from all over the world that we met. I mean, we had an Irish couple help pack up our bags. I mean, I had friends that I talked to on a regular basis from the UK, from Australia, from South Africa, from countries all over the world. But coming back and being able to see your faces, that, I mean, it's tremendous wealth. It really is. And God is with you no matter where you are. So, contentment, I want you to think about that word a little bit, because it's actually more of a commitment. It's more of a conscious effort than you realize. And, if I can be able to seek God in the place where I was in, and believe me, I didn't have my pretty moments in Korea. I wasn't perfect, believe me. I had some pretty rough goings. But if you can seek God in that place, you can seek God anywhere. So look around you. Be grateful for everything around you. That would be the biggest message that I'd want to share. So I will be around if you want to talk. Obviously, I would love to talk. I can still talk. But I think I've gone long enough. So thank you for letting me share. And if anyone wants to talk about the foreign experience, if anyone's even remotely interested in the Korean experience, believe me, I'm open ears. I will tell you everything. So anyway, God bless you. I'll pray and then I'll just let Lisa come up and finish. So let's bow our heads. Father, we live in a land that we can have our families, where we can praise you openly and freely. We can walk down the street and we know that we can go home to our families. We can see our friends and we can speak in our own language. And God, those are blessings. And I just pray for we just pray that you would guide us in this crazy existence we call life. And we'd pray that you would just open our minds and our eyes to the blessings, and we are grateful for them. Please just go with us all this day, and please just write your words on our hearts. In your holy name we pray. Amen.